This is Phantoms of the Marsh, a part of an archive broadcast, Nature of Things, from October 4th, 1990.
At my age, it may seem childish to get excited about everyday occurrences, such as the opportunity to observe again some event in nature which I've seen many times before. I'll admit, it sometimes takes a small investment on my part to achieve a level of excitement. But for the most part, it's just a natural reaction. Nature is the most creative writer of all, constantly finding new twists or surprise endings to age-old scenarios. The machinations of nature help define serendipity. The most important investments the nature lover can make are a well-honed sensitivity and a sense of wonder that refuses to surrender to the decades. When I was a student at Cornell University following World War II, I made frequent trips to a small marsh just a few miles south of Ithaca. The marsh, although only a few acres in expanse, had a vivaciousness such as I seldom seen elsewhere. During May and June, it was alive with nesting birds, red-winged blackbirds, swamp sparrows, marsh wrens, mallard ducks, green herons, bitterns, kingfishers could usually be seen or heard on the marsh, while pheasants, yellowthroats, willow flycatchers, yellow warblers, and orioles frequented the grasses or brush which fringed its shorelines. I delighted in the activity and the color, but I soon became aware that there were denizens of my marsh which were abundantly evident, even though I saw them rarely. These were the loud-voiced but extremely shy members of the rail family. About this time of the year, when the marsh had quieted to some extent, it was still possible to trigger an explosion of rail talk, much like the music of a bizarre poultry yard, merely by tossing a large stick or stone into the depths of the marsh. Sometimes it was the high-pitched descending wail of the sora, like a full-scale but thin-voiced banshee, an amazing call for a bird which is little larger than a blackbird. More often it was the loud, hen-like expostulations of the gallinule, which put one in mind of the dark, mysterious jungle. At other times, the monotonous ticket-ticket of the Virginia rail greeted the intruder. My first encounter with a member of this mysterious family was when I found the nest of a Virginia rail cradled in a dense growth of cattail near the marsh edge. I actually blundered upon it. The bird sat close to the nest until I was within 2 feet of it, then rushed away with a single loud note of protest. If the bird had not been on the nest, I would have passed it by, I'm sure. Subsequent visits to the nest always elicited the same response, demonstrating both the bird's devotion to the nest and its reluctance to fly. These are characteristics I have since learned of the whole rail family. Rail hatchlings are tiny fluffs of black down, with exaggerated feet well adapted to carry them over marsh vegetation. Incubation takes slightly over 3 weeks, and the downy chicks are able to swim and run soon after hatching. One has to arrive early at the marsh and stay late to be assured of a good look at the little ones. The broods are often large, sometimes a baker's dozen or more. They dart and cavort after insects and other small marsh creatures. By late summer, they've grown to be pale copies of the parent birds. At this time, one has a good chance of seeing them even at midday. Rails can fly, migrating long distances to winter in the Caribbean waters. But in the marsh, when they do flush, their flight is a pitiful, fluttering performance, with dangling feet almost trailing in the marsh grasses. They soon drop into the deep vegetation, leaving nothing but a trail of hen-like calls to mark their presence. Look for them at this time of the year in the mud flats, which are now exposed at the edges of most marshes. All rails have a chicken-like body. Sora and Virginia rail can be recognized by their small size, less than 8 inches in length, and their barred underbelly and flanks. The Virginia rail has a long brownish bill and brown body. The feet are brown and red-brown. The sora's bill is much shorter and is yellow. The feet are yellow, too. The large rails include the gallinule, or moorhen, and the coot, both often called the mudhen. The young of both are dull grayish in color. The adults of both are dark gray with some white markings. The adult coot has a white bill, while the moorhen has a bright scarlet bill with a scarlet shield covering the forehead. Both are excellent swimmers, but have hen-like form and actions on land. Occasionally, the king rail, which looks like a large version of the Virginia rail, may be seen in North New York State marshes. Rails once considered important game birds, but fortunately for them, rail or crake hunting is a little too specialized, and the trophies too uninteresting for most wildfowlers today. Still, the bird watcher who combines diligence and patience will find that the rewards justify the efforts. Rails have an undeniable mystique about them. The banshee whales of Crake and Coot and the simile, thin as a rail, are but two of a series of references to these birds in our English literature. I do dote on traditions. That's why it's hard for me to understand those who say the past is irrelevant, that all that really matters is the present. By itself, it seems to me, the present is a pretty dull affair, which flits away so fast there's never time enough to really comprehend its meaning, except in retrospect. The mystique of the phantoms of the marsh have been defined for me by others who found them fascinating and knew how to express their wonder. Because of their reminiscence, I expect to take this fascination with these strange birds with me to the grave. That's all I have for today. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.